Thank you very much for joining us for this CERAWeek conversation. My guest today is Pratima Rangarajan, who is the Chief Executive of the OGCI Climate Investments. Pratima, welcome to CERAWeek Conversations.
Atul, always a pleasure.
We were going to do this in Houston in March, but here we are doing this over Zoom. Hopefully next year we will be in person. My first question is about OGCI and the climate investment part of OGCI. Could you say a little bit about it?
Sure. Climate Investments is a unique fund set up to reduce carbon emissions. We are part of the OGCI, the Oil and Gas Climate Initiative, which is a consortium of some of the largest oil and gas producers in the world, and they have come together to take practical action on climate change. At Climate Investments, our success is determined by our carbon impact.
So that's very, very nice and precise. So let's talk about the carbon impact. So we are seeing, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, a very large drop in CO2 emissions. Obviously, at a huge economic and human cost, clearly not sustainable. How do you think we get a long-lasting carbon impact?
It's a really good question, Atul. The pandemic has really stopped life as we knew it, right? We have come to an almost complete standstill, both economically and socially. Yet, when we look at the reduction in emissions, carbon dioxide emissions are estimated to reduce between 4% and 8% by the end of this year. Let's put that in perspective. 4% to 8% is about the reduction that we need year over year for decades to manage our climate targets. And we need to do it without creating this upheaval in social and economic situation in the world. So that means one thing that COVID's made us realize is that we need a societal transformation and that incremental changes are not going to be enough. Now, there is good news. We do actually have a chance right now to start this societal transformation. I mean, and that's for two reasons. The first is that countries are already starting to putting together their post-COVID recovery plans. Mm-hmm. These are going to include billions of dollars of spend in both infrastructure and job creation. These plans have to include the country's climate targets and kickstart the societal transformation. The second place we can do this is in the private sector. Companies are also putting together their post-COVID strategies, and these strategies need to include significant, substantive decrease in emissions. If we do these two, we should get started on recovering the economy at the same time as setting ourselves for a good climate targets.
So, you know, just you raised the question of the companies, and we are seeing not just because of the COVID, but also a steep drop in commodity prices. Many of your member companies have cut their overall capital budget. Do you see any impact of that on your investments in OGCI?
The OGCI companies remain committed to their climate targets. From a climate investment perspective, there is no change in our ambition. We still have a huge climate challenge to overcome. And in fact, we've already announced several investments this year in low carbon solutions.
Excellent. So before we talk about a couple of specific areas around methane and carbon capture, but before we do that, just to your point about the investments, you know, you are going to do a competition at CERAWeek, but one of the first virtual events we did was on March 9th when we had your competition virtually. So what has happened to that? Did you pick the companies from that? That was going to focus around the decarbonization of oil and gas operations, right? So what's happened?
Super. Thank you for asking me that question. We were looking forward to doing that at CERAWeek. It has become a bit of a tradition. And unfortunately, we didn't get to do that in person. But our team was amazing. In 4 or 5 days, they put up a digital investment day and competition at the same exact time. So we were able to keep our schedule. we also, many thanks to the 7 companies that came and they pitched in our first digital day. And many thanks to almost 200 participants that with your partnership from CERAWeek, we were able to bring on to watch the competition. Since then, we have announced one investment from that pool of 7 companies. It's called Q-Nergy, and it's in our methane mitigation portfolio. So that was number 18 on our list.
Oh, excellent. Congratulations. So let's talk about methane emissions, you know, which are clearly mitigation of methane emissions is a really big focus for the world and for CI. So tell us about your investments and the impact you're expecting from those investments.
Yes, you know, Atul, finding and fixing methane emissions is core to our mandate because methane is a potent greenhouse gas. So we already have 6 investments in methane. Those are cover detection, measurement, and mitigation of methane emissions. And we will continue to make investments in cost-effective, innovative technologies like this. Our journey is not over there. Yet, in 2020, we feel like we need to do more. In the post-COVID environment, we do not want to see the momentum in mitigating methane emissions in the field, in the operations. We don't want to see that slow down because of lack of capital. So in order to fill that gap somewhat, today I'm really proud to announce that this week our call for proposals for projects that will show significant mitigation of methane emissions in the field in oil and gas operations. If you are an owner, an operator, or service provider and are developing a project that will show significant reduction in methane emissions within operations, we encourage you to apply on our website. As you know, we're not a grant-making body, so we're looking for economic and operationally sound projects that we can invest in. The goal for us is to find and highlight interesting methane mitigation business models that are economic, so then we can scale those around the world and achieve significant real-time decrease in methane emissions in the field.
So this is really a new, just to be clear, this is a new call to action and a new set of funds you're going to make available. Is that correct,
yes, Fatima? That's absolutely correct. It's a new investment pool, mm-hmm. and it has no cap on it. There are no geographic caps on this investment pool either. We will look at proposals in upstream, midstream, as well as downstream. We will consider early stage risk capital. We will consider putting up development capital. We're keeping this very open because we're looking for interesting and innovative proposals from the sector. And what we want to get out of this is to really kickstart methane mitigation in the field and not let the immediate capital constraints stop us from moving this forward.
So this is very good news for companies working on this area in methane mitigation. Could you say a little bit more about, let's say I am interested in applying, I go to your website, and how long before I get to know whether I'm successful or not? Is it going to be a rolling process? Say a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so we do this for every one of our investment days, Atul, as well as in general. We accept applications through our website. There will be a process by which you submit your proposal. Everything, of course, is the early stages tend to be non-confidential, then they become confidential. And our team will interact with all the proposals and they will interact with the teams and we will spend a lot of time understanding what the proposals are about before we make an investment. So it's pretty much self-explanatory and it's business as usual for us. What is most important here is that we are looking for projects in methane and we want to see real mitigation in the field. So in this particular case, it's not about building new technologies, it's about really seeing that the investment dollars are used for actual field demonstrations.
So you're looking for, as you said earlier, you're looking for impact. So do you have some view in terms of what scale of impact, is there a sort of a minimum scale of impact, either in terms of, you know, the volumes or operationally, or is it all open?
We're leaving everything open. Okay. One of the things we learned in, this is very similar to what we did in CCUS projects, because even in when we did a call for proposals for CCUS projects for our investment day, we kept the lens very wide open. And what we were amazed at is how much we learned about the interesting business models out there, the development, and some of even the smaller projects had very scalable business models. So we would absolutely want to explore small and large.
Excellent. So hopefully, and I should say, maybe you come back in a few months' time and tell us how this call for action is going, because this is very exciting, and hopefully it will have a very big impact, given that methane, as you said earlier, is such a big has such a big impact on greenhouse gas, total greenhouse gases, right?
Yes, methane emissions are important. They are very relevant, and we should do our best not to lose momentum here.
Yeah. So you also mentioned carbon capture, which is also a big focus for climate investments. Why is carbon capture a priority for you?
We think about carbon capture, utilization, and storage as essentially a carbon dioxide recycling program. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you capture this carbon dioxide, and we put it into a product or in deep storage. It's very similar to plastics recycling. When we recycle plastics properly, they don't get into the oceans. If we recycle carbon dioxide properly, it won't get into the atmosphere and cause global warming. It's as simple as that. CCUS technology is not new. It has been known. We know how to do it. It's just that there aren't many commercial scale projects out there. And this is essentially because of a lack of policy. In the energy sector, most new technologies require some level of policy intervention to manage through the early risks of new technology and to manage through the early costs of new technology. So now what we're finding with the 45Q policy in the United States, as well as some very forward-thinking European countries, we're seeing our way to actually commercializing CCUS projects. This is the first step to starting to walk down the cost and the risk curve. At the same time, at Climate Investments, we have invested in next generation technologies to lower the cost of capture, as well as to build CO2 utilization products. So products that can take the CO2 molecule and put it in cement or put it in chemicals. All of these together will drive an ecosystem that is economic for CCUS and allow it to scale. We need to do CCUS because we need to keep the CO2 out of the atmosphere. It's that simple.
So you have already an existing portfolio, isn't it, of companies. You mentioned cement. So could you say a little bit about the kind of investments you're making in CCUS at present?
Certainly. So we have... let me start maybe with the technology investments. Mm-hmm. We have an investment in a company called Svante that is a company that's working on a very low-cost carbon capture process. So how do you take that CO2, you concentrate and clean it so we can then use it again? And then we have two investments in companies that take the CO2 molecule and make products out of it. So Lydia uses it to make cement. Mm-hmm. And Econic uses the CO2 molecule to make polyols. Polyols are used in polyurethanes, which are in your mattress foams and shoe soles, etc. So that's our technology investments. In terms of projects, we have four investments, three in the United States, one in Indiana, one in California, and one in Texas. And these are in power generation as well as in ammonia. And we also have an investment in the United Kingdom called Net Zero Teesside. This is a very ambitious program, with five of our member companies. It's what we call a Kickstarter. And the goal of this project is to decarbonize the northeast of England. So take all of the industrial sources of carbon dioxide as well as the power sources, capture this carbon dioxide and sequester it. So as you can see, CCUS can be used for a wide range of industries. It's not just an oil and gas technology. Yeah.
So you are definitely, you know, thinking that it is going to be a big part of the solution for reducing emissions down the road, isn't it?
I think we have to. And almost every model that takes us to 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees has a significant number of carbon capture projects listed as part of the solution. And at this point, we are not on the trajectory to deliver that volume of projects. So we need to kickstart it. We need to move this forward.
So, yeah, and I should point out that both IEA as well as IPCC, both interpanel, Conference for Climate Change, they have both said that CCUS has to be part of the solution. So it's a globally agreed technology. We have to just deploy it. You mentioned the word Kickstarter. That's something very specific to climate investment, isn't it? Can you say something about that? What is it?
The Kickstarter is the Kickstarter concept is about creating hubs where shared infrastructure for carbon capture, utilization, and storage can be used by many industries in that area so we can collectively pull the CO2 and either store it or utilize it. But the infrastructure is shared so we can lower the cost significantly. When we do that, we anticipate that smaller industries like cement, like power, like chemicals can also participate in CCUS at the cost point that they can handle. The Kickstarter concept is really an OGCI concept because all the companies of the OGCI are looking to see how they can maybe together bring this technology to the forefront and create some mega projects where lots of industry clusters can join together. So our Net Zero Teesside is our first Kickstarter, and recently three of our companies have announced a joint program in Northern Lights in Norway as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have two, and there's more that we're looking for.
Yeah. You also mentioned in the last question on carbon capture, 45Q, and for the benefit of our audience who may not know, this is the law which was passed in the U.S., I think 2 years back now, and has been held up because of lack of some guidance. And IRS, Internal Revenue Service, just came out with some guidance. Do you think that's going to be helpful?
Yes. The 45Q was passed in early 2018 and really rejuvenated, brought more energy in behind CCUS. In fact, I would say that it put United States as a front runner. In developing and implementing carbon capture technology. But there were a lot of uncertainties left after 2018 in terms of how exactly the tax credits were going to get implemented. And these uncertainties have prevented investors and developers from truly moving these projects forward. The IRS guidance that came out last month in May of 2020 is very, very valuable because we're now in the 60-day comment period of the IRS guidance. And at coming out of this comment period, we believe that there will be the right level of clarity and a transparency that we can get projects moving forward and actually get shovels in the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, in 2020, we really think that looking at the economic climate, we would highly encourage the IRS to think to consider a direct pay mechanism with the 45Q. A direct pay mechanism will allow owners who don't have the adequate tax base to also participate in this market. When the IRS introduced direct pay for wind and solar, it was extremely effective. It got projects started quickly and jobs were created and there was really good economic outcomes. For us in CCUS, with 45Q with a direct pay mechanism, we think we could bring good economic proposals into many diverse communities in the U.S. As you know, we already have projects in Indiana, California, and Texas. We're looking forward to doing a lot more.
Yeah, so instead of a tax credit, you just really get a tax break, isn't it? And that would be much more effective.
It would be much.
Yeah. So we look forward to seeing what happens on carbon capture. Just to talk about a few other things. One is around the level of investment. So I think you are aware of somewhat of a criticism of the climate investments that, you know, you have $1 billion, which is a lot of money, but the companies should be spending a lot more on energy transition. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, you know, Atul, I always say I love it when everyone wants me to have more money. But on the reality, let's look at the reality. I actually think the money is not the issue. When we look around investors today, there is plenty of capital. Right? What is not here is the business models to really take companies and scale them. We do not have a value or a price or a mechanism for carbon. And we're still asking everyone to change their behavior. And a couple of centuries of economic experience tells us that it's very difficult to create a change in behavior without putting a value on the item that you want to change around. So putting a value on carbon is going to be very important. When we do that, you're going to find that our companies, our investment pool, those companies are going to go gangbusters because they can actually tangibly reduce carbon emissions. When we do that, we're going to find hundreds more innovators coming out of the woodwork asking for more capital and needing more capital. That's when I will need more capital. At this point, I don't think it's a capital issue. And if we needed more, we would raise more. Mm-hmm. It really is about getting business models out there.
So how optimistic are you about a carbon price? You know, I mean, ideally, it will have to be, you know, globally, or at least in the larger, you know, larger energy producers and consumers. But thoughts on that?
I think that the value on carbon can be put in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Carbon price could be one. Taxes, there is regulations, there is incentives. You know, when we got wind off the ground, there were incentives like the 45Q tax credit. Electric vehicles have incentives. We know how to create new markets. And most countries do choose to do it differently because there are border adjustments. There are complicated things to take into account. And there are also sectorial adjustments. What is right for one sector may not be right for another. And we do need to reduce carbon emissions across all sectors. This is not just a power generation issue, right? We need to do it in cement and steel, in chemicals. So I think we should remain flexible and allow different regions to achieve their objectives in the right way. But we have to agree on the objectives. And those objectives have to be rebuilding economies with climate in mind.
Is there another policy on your wish list besides value for carbon?
I'm going to stay flexible on policy, but I will say that it is my sincere hope that the post-COVID recovery strategies of countries are singularly tied to climate. Otherwise, we will see other economic challenges in the future.
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, if you look at what is happening as we speak in Europe with the EU, there seems to be a big focus on making it a more green recovery, isn't it, in Europe?
Yes. Yes, there is. And I think it's the right answer. And we are, you know, our companies are all poised to deliver carbon emissions, reduction in carbon emissions.
So my final question is that we have been now, and I think you have been in quarantine for 3 months. So what are perhaps one or two things that you're going to keep doing once the quarantine is over, for what you have been doing over the last 3 months?
So I think clearly all of us professionals have learned that we don't need to travel as much as we do. So when we get back to the office, we'll really rethink travel, not just travel transatlantically, but also travel to and from work. So there, I think with that reset, is clear and needs to be, and we'll continue doing that in our office. On my personal front, I have committed with my family to buy more locally. So that is our one commitment as we move out of this this pandemic.
That's great, and that's very important because supply chains, as you said earlier, we have to look at the emissions from every sector, not just from the power generation, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, Pradhima Rangarajan, Chief Executive of OGCI Climate Investments, thank you for joining us at CERAWeek Conversations, and thank you to all of the audience. This is CERAWeek Conversations presented to you by IHS Markit.
Thank you, Atul. Always a pleasure.